Welcome to the Travel Advice Show. Hello, hi. Today is August 27th, Monday, and our email, if you want to email any travel questions, is show@traveladviceshow.com, and our phone number is 801-542-9330, and I'm the co-host, Chris Newton, and my other co-host, Jerry Fuller. How you doing, Jerry?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
Oh, very well, very well. I'm really excited about the topic today and our guest today. Would you like to introduce our guest and talk about our topic today, Jerry?
Surely, because South America is one of my favorite destinations. In fact, I think it's probably the second most fabulous destination in the entire world. And we are very fortunate to have Eitan Silverberg, Vice President of Latour, to be with us. And Latour, I guess I should have Eitan tell us, but Latour is truly one of the world's premier South America tour companies. And so, as I said, we're excited to have you on with us today, Eitan. How are you?
Hello, and thank you very much. I'm blushing here.
Oh, fair pleasure.
thank you. It's great to have you on the show, Eitan. Yeah, thank you.
Would you like to tell a little bit about your background? Because I know you've been to South America many, many times, and I know Latour has been doing South America for many years. Would you like to talk a little bit about your company?
I have my love story with South America is a long one. I'm originally from Israel, so of course it makes sense for everybody. I'm working in the States, born in Israel, and selling Latin America. So somebody should find a sense in it. But the way it works is just that, like most of the Israeli, after the military service, which is mandatory, we want to get some break, some air. I took a backpack and I went to South America. I spent over a week backpacking from everywhere, all the way from the very southern tip of Tierra del Fuego all the way up to Venezuela and Caracas. Had the most incredible time of my life, and that's how it started.
That's great.
Fantastic, because it is truly an experience. I want to start, first of all, and ask you a question. Why do you think, well, let me put it this way. Many Americans, which is tragic, and I mean by North Americans and primarily Americans from the U.S., oftentimes think that South America is just an extension of Mexico, and that they sometimes say, well, it's so expensive to get there compared to Mexico, why don't I just go to Mexico? Why do you think people should go to South America?
Well, that's a nice one. Mexico is, I would say, you know, so South America extension is Mexico, so Mexico is extension of the USA. It is, there are so many Americans right now in Mexico, and the resorts area where people are actually traveling to almost lost every charm or any kind of indication that you were in a foreign country. Mexico is a fascinating country to start with if you go to the Yucatan area to see some of the Mayan ruins. But when you go to a beach resort, it could be the Caribbean, it could be anywhere else, it could be Hawaii. You don't really see that you are in a different place. Just the waiters happen to speak a different language. South America is really a whole world for itself. It has nothing to do with Mexico. It's dense with culture, dense with sceneries, beautiful, different cuisine. Everything is different. That's where you really think that you're going overseas. It has nothing to do with Mexico.
And South America is so varied, isn't it? I mean, it has every climatic zone known to man, doesn't it? From the Atacama to glaciers. I mean, just everything there to the Amazon, etc. So the opportunities are fabulous, don't they?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to think that countries like Peru, for example, and don't catch me on the exact number, but I think there are like 36 different types of climates in the world or something of that sort. Peru has 30 out of them.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah, it's like you can move with a 20-minute flight. You're coming from the Altiplano in the Andes, which is snow-capped mountains and glaciers and different mammals and different animals and different birds, all the way to the Amazon basin. And that's only by 20-minute flight. It's pretty spectacular, the diversity you can have in a very short distance. And, of course, you also have those very long distances, if you want, because, after all, South America is huge, absolutely huge.
Yeah.
I know. And one thing that I think most people don't realize is the world's highest golf course is there, the world's highest in elevation ski resort, the world's highest commercial airport is in South America. I mean, there are many, many things, and one of the lowest points in the world is in South America. And so,
don't forget the highest elevation vineyard.
Vineyard, too. Oh.
Yeah, the vineyard, highest elevated vineyard is in Bolivia. It's really, really up in the mountain. And remember the name, Bolivia is starting to produce very interesting wines that are going to penetrate the American market very soon.
Now, you mentioned how big South America is, and I think that's probably the most stunning thing that people are a discoverer when they discover, decide to go to South America, because Brazil is 4/5 the size of the United States, and that's only one country. But I wanted to ask this question to you. Because it is so big and it does go north-south, is there a best time, if you wanted to see much of South America, what month or months would you go?
Well, it's a continent. It's so big that you definitely, it's like asking what would be the best time to go to the United States, Canada, and Mexico combined. Like, what do you think is going to be the good month? It's a round-the-clock, round-the-year destination. We have the Andean countries, which are around the equator. Therefore, they almost have no season. They have they have some rainy season maybe and then a dry, but the temperature doesn't vary that much. Then, of course, you have the south, when it can get very cold in their winter, which is our August over here. And then you have the northern part, which is very mild throughout or very warm throughout in a way. So whenever, whichever month you're going to pick, you're going to find somewhere to go in South America. And believe it or not, even months like August over here, which are, again, deep winter down in the very south and tip of South America, are pretty amazing. Because if you travel to a place like the Torres del Paine National Park, one of the most beautiful national parks on the planet, it's a microclimate within a microclimate. And over there, although it may be cold, the air is still, everything is surreal, and it is absolutely spectacular, and you have the park for yourself. So there aren't any places, really, that you cannot be there in the southern winter. The opposite. We're trying to welcome people to travel there in this time, because that's where they're not going to find any, you know, they're not going to be standing online to see those sites. It's just going to be beautiful, and it's going to be almost a private. So around the clock, around the year, you can always visit somewhere in South America.
Okay. Yeah.
And one of the things that some people are hesitant to go to South America about might be safety. And I know Chris was asking about safety. Chris, you want to ask your question about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
John.
Yeah, is there any major concerns right now, like in many of the countries in South America, for safety and security?
You see, interesting enough, if you go over the Department of State list of warning and safety issues, yes, you're going to find in South America all kind of local places where have issues of theft, of some crimes, of course, but that's true for New York City as well. And you know what? There are some places in New York City that you will not find you walking at night.
Oh, yeah,
However, the funny thing, which is not funny, it's pretty sad, if you go over the State Department advisories, there are none of the countries in South America has any issues of American, as an American person, to travel because of terrorist threats or any kind of safety because of who they are. It is one of the last places on the planet when Americans are loved, welcome, and the dollar worth so much more than any other place.
Oh, okay.
Think of it. You travel to Spain, you have an issue of terrorism. You go to England, look to what happened in London. There is no, like, a safe place on this planet. However, the only place Americans are not a target is South America.
Okay.
Somebody may steal your money because you were flushing it out, or somebody really going to like your Rolex if you were not smart enough to actually put it in the safety box. But if you decided to go out with the Rolex, this is what they want. They don't want you. They want your money. So just leave it at a safety box and you have no issue.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any countries where one shouldn't travel at all right now in South America, or is it pretty much open?
Well, we are very much firm believer that the U.S. citizens should not support Venezuela at this point. We believe that what this leader of this country is doing to the reputation of the U.S. Is horrendous, and there is no reason why they should enjoy any kind of income from leisure travel into Venezuela. So we, as a political declaration, as a statement, we have pulled it out of our brochure last year, and we're not going to feature them unless this guy is down from power.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, of course, when you are an American traveling over there, and if they have some riots in the street and they are burning American flags, first you're going to feel very uncomfortable. Second, they may attack you. So Venezuela is definitely off the chart for me.
Okay.
And what do you think about going to all or some of Colombia?
Colombia is...
I noticed most companies don't take...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as far as safety goes, do you think that's an all right place to go?
Oh, yeah, of course. Colombia is, again, one of those large countries, and there's some areas in the very south of it where nobody gets there, when you may have some issues with some people that grow those very unfriendly plants, so some of us. So we want to keep away from the very southern tips of this country. But when you are in places like Cartagena, which is the most beautiful Caribbean jewel you can find, UNESCO World Heritage All Cities, Barranquilla, Bogota with this beautiful gold museum, these are beautiful places that you feel safe, comfortable, you have very deluxe hotels, very nice infrastructure for tourism, very friendly people, and you know the slogan for Colombia right now is passion, pasión, and this is what they are. They're passionate about their country, and it's just a pleasure being with them. And we actually, and watch it, because this is the next coming thing. Right now, in September 12th through the 15th, Colombia, Cartagena, Colombia, is actually hosting the next Travel Mart, which is the biggest travel trade in South America that is going to is being held every year in different places. So this is the first time Colombia is getting it. So there are going to be 1,000 people from all over the world going over there, learning about the destination, and getting a taste of it. And mark my word, next year you're going to see it in every brochure of every major tour company in the U.S.
Wow, okay. So it's a growing market. It's a good,
And Latour is definitely featuring it,
Well, while we're talking about that, do you recommend families with children going to South America? If so, is there a minimum age you would take, and are there places that are better for children to go, families that go?
Oh, well, you're kind of touching a very sensitive issue over here. I'm a father of a 6-year-old monster. She's a girl, and a 2-year-old baby, which is in a way to be a big monster as well. Both of them, the sweetest thing ever, have been traveling with me in South America for years now. As well. The other one is only 3. But everywhere I go, one of the good things about being a vice president of a tour company is you get some perks when you go and travel down south. What the heck, I'm just taking them with me. But I want to tell you something. I'm doing a roadshow and explaining different travel agents in the U.S. about the possibility of traveling with children. And it is pretty amazing what you can do with children. And let's speak of some of the reason why it's so great to go down south. The first thing, which is something very simple that not everybody thinks of, is that you don't have time zone differences. And if they are, they're very minor. You know, many people will take their children for Europe for the weekend. Mm-hmm. By the time you travel over there, you're already 10 hours later. By the time the children decide to go to sleep, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and when they really realize that time to go to sleep is really 7 or 8, you already have to come back to the States with a 10-hour difference as well. When you travel north to south, you can go, you board the aircraft overnight, you wake up in the morning in your own time. So the children are not tired, nobody is nagging you that they're upside down in the time. Everything is easier, so that's an easy start. The second thing in Latin America is that, let me give you a news flash, Latin people like children.
Oh.
And it works perfectly. It works like magic. And if you are traveling with a family and you have somebody that takes care of your kids and the kids are happy, you're happy. And that's the secret. And I've been in the most discriminating, the most deluxe hotels and properties, and they made me feel like home over there, even in places like the Copacabana Palace in Rio de Janeiro, which is an Orient Express property. You should have seen, I mean, I will never forget it. I got there at like 11 p.m. at night after a long drive from Búzios, 3 hours drive at night. We got her kind of tired. The kids and I, we all get to this beautiful suite that was waiting for us. And then 5 minutes later on, somebody knocks at the door, bring chocolate candies for the kids with their name on it. And 2 minutes later, another maid comes in with little tiny bathrobe and flip-flops for the size of the kids.
Mm.
So even an upscale snob type of accommodation as the Copacabana Palace or Orient Express property is very much geared into children, and everything is done beautifully. And you know, if you look at other countries like Peru, when you talk about traveling on flights within the country, an hour here, an hour there, that's what we're talking about flights. You can be in the Andes and then into the Amazon. Everything is friendly. Everything is safe. The guides just take the kids in their hands and they go together. You don't hear from them for a couple of days. It's really, really beautiful. I mean, I would recommend everybody to take the kids. And when it comes to an age, I would say that a kid of the age of 6 and up will truly enjoy the opportunity of being there. Less than that will be just having fun, but will not have any souvenir from the trip itself.
Right. Well, talking about children traveling, I know I've been to the Galapagos, I think it's 7 times, and I know that on several of the cruises that I've taken, that there have been many children. Let's talk about the Galapagos for a moment, on how to travel it and that type of situation. And do you agree with me that children love the Galapagos with a passion?
Well, if you have a, I think that is a basic. Before you become a grown up, all kids love animals. That's it. When you become a grown up, something is messing up your head. You may forget the fact that you're supposed to be loving nature. But all the kids who start with love animals and love nature. When you go to the Galapagos, it's one of the last places on this planet that you can actually have such an interaction with nature with absolutely no barriers. You can sit down on a rock when a bird comes and flies on your shoulder, and you can actually sit next to a baby sea lion, and he will come and give you a little kiss and run away. This is something you cannot do anywhere else on the planet, because those animals regard you as one of theirs, and you're not showing any threat to them. Kids love it. They enjoy it very much. Of course, again, everybody enjoyed it in its own level. If you are 4 years old, you're not going to remember that. You're just going to remember climbing on the rocks and running on the beach. If you're 6, 7, or if you're a teenager, this is a life-changing experience. It's really a humbling experience. This is really something you want to do. Of course,
it's a life-changing experience, even for adults. It's a phenomenal experience, isn't it? So all ages and families just, they all love it. It's a great uniter of families, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's how many places can you actually watch evolution in the making? You travel from one island to the other island, and the same bird 2 hours ago on this island looks a bit different than the one that is 2 hours later, just because this island got a bit more rain this year, and, you know, depends on the size of the beak for that bird, it can adjust better for the food that was provided in that year. It's pretty amazing. That's something somebody has to experience before they go to the next place, yes.
Great.
Well, I know in the Galapagos there are many, well, not many, many, but there are numerous types of ways of seeing the Galapagos by boat. And I know there are all kinds of boats. Do you have a favorite type of boat to see it by?
Okay, the Galapagos has, my company works only with very upscale, and very up standard. There are very, you know, cheap ones that will go for backpackers, the one I took after the military service, etc. When we share 16 people sharing one bathroom, that's not for me anymore, not for my clients. However, today the trips are being divided into the large boats and the small yachts. The large boats, at a maximum, can take up to 90 passengers on a boat, because this is the maximum allowance of the national park. The small boats can be anything from 16 to 36 or 48, depends on the yacht, and they totally provide a different experience. It depends on the passenger. If you are comfortable in a smaller environment, a bit more intimate interaction with your fellow passengers, the little yachts are a great venture for you, because they get closer to the island, it takes faster to download and disembark on the little dinghies into the island, and you get more like an all-inclusive type of a program, and then we can really make some friends for life on that trip. If you want the steady of a larger boat, those 90-passenger, 100 boats, which you usually build for a larger number of people, give you the stability, more public area, of course, no casinos, anything of that sort over there. It's all around the expedition. But then, of course, you have some, disadvantages, the fact that it takes more time to disembark. You are away a bit from the shore, and the ratio between the naturalist and the number of passengers is larger. If you are going on a small boat, you're probably going to have one naturalist for every 10 or 12 passengers. If you're going on the large boat, you may have it up to 17 passengers, and that kind of changes your experience. So if it has up to me, I will go with the small one. But most of the people, just for the comfort of being on a stable water, would like the large one.
Okay, wow. That's great. Well, since we're on the topic of islands, what is new in Easter Island? And is there anything exciting and new on Easter Island? There.
Well, Easter Island is again a little dot on the planet that very few people have seen, and this is really for the savvy passenger. That's not for somebody that says, "Hey, I want to go up to Chile." By the way, you have to go to Chile; it's part of Chilean territory.
Right.
It is 5 hours flight from Santiago, Chile. So we're talking about a very remote area.
Okay.
It's really in the middle of nowhere. It is as overwhelming as seeing the pyramids in Egypt. It's really something that makes you think. It's a lot of mysticism about what those images are. But what's nice and new in the Easter Island is the fact that the Explorer lodges, which right now they have two other different lodges within South America, both of them in Chile. One of them is in Tierra del Fuego in the Torres de Paine National Park, and then one of them is all the way in the Atacama Desert, two very different type of areas. They are opening a brand new one in January 2008, which will be a spectacular all-inclusive type of a lodge. And when I say all-inclusive in those places and for the explorer, we're not talking about the booze, we're not talking about the food, which is, by the way, included. The all-inclusive is all about the excursion and the experiences. And if you are a hiker, and I'm not talking about, you don't have to be a hardcore hiker, if you would like to discover nature not through a glass of a bus, this is the way to go. They will take you on those beautiful hikes when after the curve around the mountain you're going to see a crater, and then there's going to be a beautiful deluxe picnic lunch waiting for you. Everything going to be by foot, and it's rated from very easy to more steep and of course more strenuous walk depends on what you want to do. And this is probably one of the nicest and the hottest destinations to go in 2008, and it's opening, the soft opening December 2007, but it's going to be fully opening in January 2008. Beautiful place.
Excellent. Mm. Oh, interesting.
I know it's a... the neat thing, one of the neat things about each island, I've been there five times, mainly by three times by boat and two times by plane. But the main interesting thing about it, it doesn't have any real great beaches. And that was the thing, being in the South Pacific, I would have thought that the island would have hundreds of beautiful, magnificent South Pacific beaches. But it is more rugged coast, and there's only, what, maybe a mile long decent beach that you can really swim in on, I think it's the north side. Northwest side. And that was the thing that really amazed me, other than, of course, the, are they called the moas? I'm almost blank. The statues.
Yes.
Oh, I wanted to ask you a question. We were talking about the lodges down in Torres de Paine, and I know sometimes the travel advisor, we've had people actually ask the question, why should we take the time to go clear to the bottom of the world to see mountains that are like Alaska? And do you, we have an answer that we give to that, but do you want to respond, Elon?
Yeah. It is, you know, for people that have been in Alaska and in Torres del Paine, they will tell you that if Alaska is really rated 9, this will be 11 out of 10. Mm-hmm. The Alaska is spectacular, and we should never, ever underestimate how powerful and how beautiful it is. But it's very much traveled, and unless you go deep into the country over there with a special expedition, you're going to end up seeing a lot of tourists, a lot of trains, a lot of cruise line, a lot of souvenir shops, and many rangers with beautiful hats. It is, in a way, it's very manicured. It's very well done. It's a very Americanized place because this is America. When you go down south to Torres del Paine National Park, you feel that you're totally by yourself over there. You know, one of my friends was hosting the, the Prince of Jordan on his honeymoon over there. And the Prince of Jordan, of course, is a person that is close by inside the walls of his palace in Amman. He cannot really do much. That's where he has to hike. That's where he has to do his jogging for security. It's a beautiful garden, but it is, after all, behind walls. When he came over there down to Torres del Paine, and he got the most beautiful suite in the Explorer Lodge, etc., he had a look at the suite, had a look at the mountain, left the luggage over there, took his fresh newlywed wife, and went out to the mountains with all his, bodyguards, and hiked for 2 weeks on the mountains because he said he never, ever saw so much air and so much beauty in one place. Mm-hmm. And the size is very small comparing to Alaska, and what you can see over there within 5 hours hikes are changes in diversity, which you're probably not going to see in other places. You can see the condors and the guanacos. This is type of a llama, you know, one of those relatives. All those great birds and the ducks and the geese, and everything is floating and flying and running and eating. If you're camping over there, which is a great thing, you can wake up in the morning in the middle of a plain summer down there, and it's snowing, and then you have these herds of guanacos, of hundreds of guanacos coming down the hills. You're surrounded by them. They couldn't care less for your existence. It is really overwhelming experience.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of times out west, we're from Utah, and we're about a four-hour drive from the Grand Tetons. And the Grand Tetons, most people in the west have seen them. And I will say, because the Tetons are probably in the top two or three most beautiful mountains in the entire continental United States. And I'll say, if you can imagine them about 10,000 feet higher, and about 500 miles longer. It is absolutely most spectacular. I mean, the Torres de Paine is probably in the top three or four most beautiful mountain ranges on Earth, and they're totally indescribable, aren't they, Tom? You just can't describe them. They're so jagged and spectacular. It's amazing.
It is absolutely. And the opportunities for hikers, and for people that want to go horseback riding, everything is down there, and it's so accessible and so easy. You can do a whole circuit of 7 days hiking without seeing civilization if you want, or you can actually spend your time in this most beautiful, relaxed lodge with a massage every night and great champagne overlooking fireplace and the mountains, and do daily trips and still feel that you're totally by yourself in that national park. So it definitely should be in everybody's agenda.
And they should stay at the lodge because the other hotels outside of the lodge end up costing almost as much by the time you buy all the extras, and they're not in the park. So it's just
absolutely a
phenomenal experience. I wanted to ask one other question because, wow, our time is getting to a close, but
yeah.
I wanted to ask two questions. One of them, if you're going down to South America, what would be the, and I know this is a hard question to answer because it's impossible, but what would be the shortest time that you would even consider going down there to even get a beginning of a feel?
Okay, I have kind of some rule of thumb for that. If you have, let's say, a weekend on a 5 days, that's a perfect for one city. And remember, because of no jet lag, you can really do it. So something like Rio de Janeiro, beautiful, sexy, or Buenos Aires, Paris of South America, perfect for a weekend, shopping, leather goods, restaurants, museums, beautiful avenues, beautiful looking people. That's perfect for like 5 days. When you go up to like 7 or 8 days, pick one country. Argentina for itself, beautiful for that one. Again, it's just going to be the highlight, but you know, that's what we have. People don't have 5 weeks vacation like in Paris. This is the USA. That's what we have to live with. 7 days will be very nice for a short Peruvian trip. Remember, Peru is as large as Spain, Germany, and France combined. So people sometimes told me, hey, I need like 3 days for Peru. I said, no, you need kind of more. But if you have seven to eight days, you will be able to see some of the highlights, especially, of course, the Machu Picchu, just chosen as the new one of the seven wonders of the world. And then if you go to a combination of, let's say, 10 to 12 days, you can start combining two countries, something like maybe Chile and Argentina, maybe Argentina and a bit of Brazil, because as you said, Brazil is larger than the United States if you do not count Alaska in it. And if you get into the 14 and the 15 days, maybe three countries, depends on where you are. You can do Galapagos and Ecuador, plus Peru, maybe a bit of Bolivia, or you can do Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. But these are all going to be just the tip of the iceberg. This is a continent that when you hit with a bug once, you're going to go again and again.
That's great.
And one thing that I wanted to mention also, it's not part of South America, Antarctica, but do you suggest that people who go to Antarctica spend time in South America, or just mainly do Antarctica and come back for South America? Combine the two or not? Do you have a
It's a matter of how much money you've got. The tour for Antarctica starts somewhere at $7,000-$8,000 per person for the tour only, without adding anything on top of that. So if you have that money to spend, and usually it goes up to $15,000, depends how good the boat is, and you have enough time, because the tours to Antarctica are pretty long, it takes a couple of days to sail down there and then spend the time and come back, then go ahead and do it. It's a different continent again. It has nothing to do with South America. But you have to get to South America to get to Antarctica. So if you already flown 13,000-14,000 all the way to Punta Arenas or to Ushuaia, yeah, you know what? Why not? Discover the Patagonia, see those beautiful places. It's a different environment altogether, different culture, and you actually see some people over there as well. So it's going to be interesting to combine those two, if at all possible, time-wise and money-wise.
Okay.
Fabulous. Well, Eitan, this has been absolutely interesting, and I know our listeners are getting terribly enthralled about going to South America. And we do want to remind everyone, and they can see it on the website, and they can go directly to your website. But don't forget La Tour, because they're a magnificent company. And as you can tell, the vice president, and that's the quality of the company, we highly recommend them. So do consider South America, and don't let a lot of people are sort of turned off also on the airfare prices to go to South America. Have you found that, Eitan?
The airfares are pretty spectacular sometimes. I mean, they can be steep, of course, when you go around Christmas, But when you go on, when you go in shoulder season and not on the high holidays, you can get a great airfare for $600-$700 round trip from almost anywhere in the U.S. down to the deep south. You just have to be to catch it on time. And we have great contract with some of the leading airlines, which are flying all over the continent. And you do have to call your travel agent for that, because sometimes the combination of the regional and domestic flights in South America can be as expensive as flying back and forth from the U.S., unless you do it in a conjunction as a through fare, which will be happy to work it for you. And you can call us either at 800-825-0825, or you can go to www.latour.com, or you can call your travel agent that you have been working for years, because we are a true wholesaler, and we work with all the travel agents. We respect them very much.
That's great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Eitan, again, thank you very, very much for being on.
Thank you. We'll look forward
to having you on again.
My pleasure. Yes. Thank you for hosting me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, and you can check out the show on www.traveladviceshow.com, and we'll have a link right to your company, La Tour there, Eitan. And yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and it's been great. Thank you, listeners, for listening in, and until next week.